Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
The WNBA has been the hot league to get involved with. I'm Dennis Foley. The newest team, the Golden State Valkyries, is making its inaugural campaign this year with five more new teams planned over the next few years. KCBS's Holly Kwan spoke with WNBA analyst and former Sacramento Monarchs head coach Mary Murphy about what we're seeing from the league.
Yeah, I think the acceleration has been incredibly dramatic over the last couple of years. I mean, keep in mind that there are two new franchises that will be joining the WNBA next season, and that's the Toronto Tempo, who will be the first team in Canada. And I don't know if our listeners know this, but Canada is a huge, huge basketball country. They just love it, expecting great things from Toronto. And then Portland's going to get a team as well. And we all know the kind of success that the college teams, Oregon State and Oregon, have had in the state of Oregon. So excited for both of those teams. And then the expansion today just exploded, you know, in the WNBA, with teams being added in Cleveland, Detroit, and Philly. It won't be immediate. It's in 2028, 2029, and 2030. But just remarkable, Holly, that we're talking about in 2030, you know, what this league's going to look like. It's kind of mind-boggling, really.
You want to grow a league smart, and you want to grow these teams smart, but, you know, you can't deny that there are so many people out there, at least, like, for instance, wearing Valkyries gear. And it's one thing for a team to be successful and grow their fan base. It's another for the entire league to do that. And I'm wondering, what does this mean for, you know, opportunities for athletes and competitive wages?
Well, I think when you know, just even look down the road at when these teams will be joining the WNBA, the young women that are in high school right now are the ones that will be drafted into, you know, during those years. So what it means is that the level of the talent in this country, starting in, even much younger, but into high school, the programs, the AAU programs, the college programs, has just accelerated at such a dramatic speed that the competitiveness of the league, and you know, you talked about the Bay Area, everyone's wearing the violet and is behind the Valkyries, and they've really made a nice blueprint of what a terrific expansion team can be. And you know, the investment that Joe Lacob made is interesting. He paid, I think, $50 million for his expansion team, and these three teams had to pay $250 million to get into the WNBA. So in a few short years, that's the explosion that has happened on the financial end. And I think it speaks very, very, it sends a resounding message when the ownership of, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Detroit Pistons, and the Philadelphia 76ers all want to be a part of this. It's a very, very strong statement about their cities and the support for women's professional basketball, and that, you know, people don't do this for charity. They do this to make money, and they do this to provide entertainment, and that those ownership groups feel like this is worth that kind of investment really is a statement unto itself.
That's WNBA analyst.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Mary Murphy speaking with KCBS's Holly Kwan. That investment also comes with an expectation of some sort of financial return. Sportico recently said the Valkyries, the newest WNBA team, is worth $500 million. That's the highest valuation of any women's professional sports team. It's also nearly double what the average WNBA team is worth. KCBS's Steve Scott asked University of California, Berkeley, women's sports expert Bonnie Morris what this means for women's sports.
I think the valuation of the Valkyries just shows how much can happen when you have several generations moving toward recognition and visibility of women's sports. It's a fantastic hallmark. I think a lot of people are just waking up to the importance of women's sports, but they are also looking for something that is positive, successful, motivating, and inspiring in these tough times. And they have found that right here in their backyard. But it's the culmination of so many decades of hard work by coaches, administrators, players, lawyers, everybody who has really tried to push women's sports to the forefront.
Why the Valkyries? Why not, say, the New York Liberty in New York City, the defending WNBA champions, or the Indiana Fever with Caitlin Clark? Why the Valkyries?
I think that's a great question. The new kid on the block, everybody likes the shiny penny, but there's also, I think, in this region, just tremendous support and excitement. You have a huge foundation of women's activism here in the Bay Area. You have a very highly educated population. You have a whole lot of people who have been advocates and lawyers for women's rights. You have a naturally active outdoors, you know, athletic population because of our pleasant climate most of the time. And you also have a whole lot of people who are graduates of sports programs or whatever kind of activism around women's sports. So you have the perfect audience, and you have a whole lot of money from Silicon Valley and tech startups and people who really are looking to invest in their daughters or in the future of women and girls sports. And so you have that sort of perfect coming together of all of those variables. I also think, though, the players are really good. Everyone is so excited. And with the momentum, there's a real, you know, financial support.
The Valkyries are doing things that no expansion team has ever done. They have a winning record at this point of the season, which is amazing. They've sold out seven straight games at Chase Center. Can we expect this team to keep growing? $500 million today, who knows what tomorrow? Is the Bay Area the right place for a team like this to thrive?
Yeah, I really think it is. I think it's the perfect addition. I think it's what a lot of people have been looking for. There have been so many people who have been waiting for a women's team. There's been a lot of support for women's soccer, obviously. There's also, you know, a long tradition of Olympians coming from this area. We also have, you know, the first ever women's collegiate basketball game was played between Stanford and UC Berkeley back in the 1890s. And so there's the history in the region, and there's also, I think, a lot of media focus on women power, the importance of validating female strength. You have all kinds of growth of, you know, a new women's sports bar, demand for more media coverage of women's games, lots and lots of high schools that are actually adapting women's sports history, and I've gone around and spoken at a number of schools, boys and girls clubs that are really focusing on, you know, training for girls and bringing in coaches to talk about the potential of playing pro. So, yes, this is the right time and the right place, the right moment, and I think the enthusiasm breeds enthusiasm.
That's women's sports expert Bonnie Morris speaking with our Steve Scott. So what has it been like as a fan? KCBS's Randy Demolig has been to a few Golden State Valkyries games so far this season. They play at Chase Center, which is also home to the NBA's Golden State Warriors. So, Randy, what's the comparison been like in terms of vibe?
Yeah, no, Chase Center is absolutely packed every time I've been. I've probably seen 7 or 8 of the team's 10 home games now. They've had 10 straight sellouts since opening night, their inaugural home opener. And it's, I mean, the energy is incredible. I mean, I'm not sure I've actually been in a crowd that's that excited. You know, I've never seen a team have its inaugural season and kind of be there every step of the way. But even just looking through videos on my phone from Warriors games and Valkyries games, you know, you take your phone out to record some of the big shots or the big plays in the fourth quarter. And I mean, it's just a real difference. It's a decibel difference. I don't have the exact number, but yeah, the crowd is super into the game and they have a great time.
What's your hope as someone who has seen these games now, who has, you know, been, you know, in the Valkyries environment so far, you know, for year 3, 4, 5, where, hey, maybe there's a chance, you know, they may have a great season, they may have a bad season. What do you hope for the team as a fan here in the Bay Area and someone who's, you know, paying attention to the broader sports market?
Totally. Yeah, well, in terms of, you know, the winning aspects from the fan standpoint, I know that Joe Lacob, who's involved with the ownership group, has promised a championship in the first 5 years, similar to the way he promised a championship when he took over the Warriors ownership group. So, I mean, from that perspective, of course, we want to see them go deep in the playoffs and have a great run, be the upset team, and then eventually, hopefully, the established, competitive, you know, year-to-year playoff team. But off the court, I mean, I just want them to continue being involved in the community. I think that they've made some very individual efforts, you know, that maybe the Warriors would not have done particularly, or maybe wouldn't have taken advantage of in the same way. So I think that they're equipped in a special way to, you know, reach the communities in a way that the other teams can't.
What should people who haven't gone to a WNBA game expect when they go?
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of the times the sports game going population maybe gets a bad rap of, you know, it's the people getting, you know, rowdy in the bleachers. It's the people who are, you know, fighting and just screaming at the opposing players and, you know, yelling jeers and that type of thing. I think that what the Valkyries have kind of illuminated for me is the more positive and community oriented aspect of fandom and of just being a sports fan in general. Like I said, that's their inaugural season, so it's almost like found money. Any type of success they have is gravy on top of them just existing, you know? But yeah, that's kind of what I would say is that, you know, it's not going to be the kind of, I don't know, I've been to Dodgers-Giants games where you hear things I can't repeat, and I haven't heard those similar things at Valkyries games. And, you know, even when they're booing opposing players at the free throw line, it's a very loud boo, but then it's, you know, they're is not the kind of vitriol I would say you might see involved in other sports. I definitely anticipated, you know, the positivity. I thought that it would be a great energy, and it even exceeded expectations. What I think a lot of people weren't expecting was an actual competitive team, not a knock on the roster or the coaching staff or anything like that with the organization, but just historically, you know, franchise expansion teams, especially in the WNBA, often take a long time to find any measure of success. So at the time of recording, I think they're 1 or 2 games above 500, which is amazing, I would say, for a first-year team that has been together a matter of months. And yeah, I think that's been the most surprising part in terms of their early season success. What hasn't surprised me is, like I said, the embrace by the fans. You know, I didn't think that it would be, oh, there's, you know, this little sister, little sibling dynamic to the big Warriors team, the championship teams, and, you know, the kind of golden era of Bay Area sports almost that we've had extended since the 2010s, since the Giants were winning their championships, the Warriors, the Niners got really close. I think that the Valkyries are, you know, being embraced and woven into that fabric in a really, really embraced in an interesting way.
How does WNBA fit into your mental landscape of professional sports?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know that, you know, for all the different sports we follow here between basketball, baseball, all of that, I just in terms of the 12-month calendar, I see it as we have basketball year-round now. You know, through the summer, the WNBA season starting pretty much at the conclusion or, you know, the start of in the middle of the NBA playoffs. So, you know, by then, the NBA season has, you know, gone on for its 82 games. You've gotten through maybe a round or two of the playoffs. And it is kind of a palate cleanser in a way, where it's, you know, this new fresh teams, it's the season is starting. I would say I'd actually mention that one aspect of watching the Valkyries play that you don't necessarily get watching the NBA and the Warriors is the Eurobasket departures. So during the WNBA season, the big pro women's league in Europe, Eurobasket, has its national competition. So you'll see players leave and play for Belgium and Germany and Spain and all of these powerhouse teams that, you know, in their absence creates opportunities for the lesser proven players. So almost in a way where you'd see a two-way contract in the NBA or a 10-day contract type of thing where you're called up from a minor league team and you kind of get they take a flyer on you. That's one aspect of the WNBA season that I'm getting used to as a fan, and, you know, watching the players leave for 2 weeks and come back or compete even against each other, you know, on the other teams and then come back and play for the same teams here. I know it's created some drama with the, you know, departures of some of the players who, you know, go back and they come back and they're no longer with the team. So it's just, you know, we love the drama in the sports world and it's another source of it. So, yeah, it's exciting.
That's KCBS's Randy Dumalik. Let's pivot now to Dan Dibley from Odyssey Sports Station 95.7 The Game. So WNBA, you could argue, is probably the hottest sports league in the country right now, just in terms of growth. Line go up. What would you say is your assessment of how the league has performed over recent years, and really what's behind this trend?
Well, it's two things. One is a recognition among a general audience that women's basketball is not only fun to watch, but it's a very good product. And this goes before Caitlin Clark, and I'll get to that in a moment. But I do think that if you have watched it for a long time, and I have, because I'm a guy who loves sports and I love basketball in particular, and this region is very basketball friendly, but it was on the uptick for a long time before Caitlin Clark. And then you had Caitlin Clark, who played at Iowa, and she had a rival in Angel Reese. And, you know, the women's NCAA tournament had slowly become a thing. And then when that happened, and Caitlin Clark, who, you know, did what she did and had a great run to the final, and they didn't quite get over the hump, but it was a thing that captured many people, including what we call the casuals. And so the casuals got on board, and the league was already on an uptick. And now you have this young star that everyone from Middle America to the East Coast to the West Coast can really, like, latch their teeth into, hitch their wagon to. And so the league was ready to explode, and then they had the player who helped it erupt.
So we talk a little bit about, you know, I guess we know there's a style difference between, you know, NBA, WNBA, there are other forms of basketball. You know, for, let's say, one of these casual fans, casual air quotes,
right?
What should they expect? You know, if let's say they've never watched the WNBA before, they're like, I don't understand why it's so popular. What is it about the product that maybe might be appealing to them and they may not realize it?
I think what it is the idea that the ball will be shared. It's passing, it's player movement, it's, you know, skill at a below the rim level. And I know some WNBA players can dunk, but the dunk is more of a one-off. And I do think that the sport is more like what you would see if you actually played basketball. It's, you know, ball movement, player movement. It's what the Warriors do so well. And it's partly why I think if you look at the LPGA, Ladies Professional Golf Association, it's becoming more popular because if you're a golf fan and you tune into a ladies professional golf event, they hit the ball like you do as a man for the most part. These pro men, they hit the ball 350, 360. You can't associate, you can't assimilate to what they're doing, but you watch the ladies and they're more skilled than you would be, but they play the game the way you would play it, and they play it in the distance that you would play it. And so when you watch women's basketball, the WNBA, they play in a way that is very similar to what you would do. It's not to say the NBA itself is bad, because it's obviously awesome, but when you watch the women's game, you can see them play the way that you kind of would play if you were out there on an open public court.
Yeah, in a way, it's kind of like a, I don't want to say it's a refreshing difference, but or a refreshing change, but you think of NBA, even Major League Baseball, NFL, where it's almost like, I don't say they're freaks, but it's almost superhuman what they're doing. And I guess, you know, what you're saying is
you know, sometimes fans just want someone they could relate to, or seeing something that's like, hey, you know, I just did that in my driveway, and you know, it's nice to see someone kind of playing like I do.
No doubt. And I also think that now that we've gotten into this a little bit further, and I remember the days of, you know, Lisa Leslie and Cheryl Miller, and because I'm a little bit older, but now if you're a younger person and you're starting to follow the game, Sabrina Ionescu, who is from the East Bay, you know, Miramonte High School, and she lived in Walnut Creek, and you start to know these people, and Paige Beckers, who came in this year, and she's somebody who people know, and Cameron Brink, who is, you know, doesn't hurt her case that she's also like model good looking. And, you know, here you're starting to know Kayla Thornton and Kate Martin, and you know these players and you know these teams. And for the Valkyries, they launched at the perfect time. It's not the apex, but it definitely is at an inflection point where the league is ready to erupt, and you've got an owner who is really good at spending money and supporting a team. You've got the best arena in the U.S., maybe in the world. You've got a great logo, a great brand, and it doesn't hurt that they're actually winning games. So the launch of this team could not have been more perfectly timed.
Yeah, let's talk about the Valkyries. I mean, this is their first full season as a WNBA team. Sportico says that they're worth $500 million.
Whoa.
Not 500 billion yet. Okay. $500 million. But that's a significant value. It's almost double what the average WNBA team is worth. I mean, what's your view on just the business side of the Valkyries, where they're here and suddenly most valuable team?
I think it's a great arena, great owner, and a market that is very, very much friendly to women's basketball. And, you know, I grew up here, and I've been here since the late 60s. And so I kind of have seen the evolution of girls and women's basketball in the area. And if you think about Stanford with Tara Vandeveer and what she did for must have been 40 plus years, and they always were good and they were competitive and they won national championships, and she's the gold standard. And then one of her players, Jennifer Azey, went on to coach, and you know, so many other things in the area. Karen Horstmeyer, who coached at Cal, and what Cal did for a good run. St. Mary's had a run. And so high school, college women's basketball has always been something that's been supported here. And so this was a long time coming. And so you mix all of the different elements, the confluence of an area that loves and supports women's sports. And I go back to Brandi Chastain in 1999 when they won the World Cup, and you know, she took off her shirt and the famous iconic celebration. She went to Santa Clara. And so women's sports in the Bay Area have always been supported. Basketball here is loved. Joe Lacob is the best owner maybe in all of pro sports. The arena is amazing, and the logo itself and the team name is spectacular. So all those things have combined to make this an epic first year.
So again, you know, this is almost perfect. I don't want to say perfect timing, but very good timing for the Valkyries. You got, as you mentioned, great market, great yep. building, great owner, all these pieces. But it's part of an upward swing or an outward expansion for the WNBA, which, you know, for its most of its history, it's kind of, you know, gone in and out with expansion teams, teams moving around. We're looking, if you include the Valkyries, six new teams in the span of, what, maybe 5 years? I mean, what's your anticipation for how the league grows and how it continues to evolve and develop?
I don't think it's going to continue to be exponential, but I don't think it's going to decline. And if you look at women's college basketball right now, you could name 6 to 8 players, and I won't name drop them all because the audience maybe doesn't know them yet, but for one, Juju Watkins, who, if you watch insurance commercials, she already has a commercial, and she's at USC, and she's not quite draft eligible yet. But when she is, she'll be a number one or number two overall pick. And as you start to see the evolution of the college game, it's going to lead to the WNBA. And think about it. If you look at the overall population in the USA, I think it's 51%. Girls and women, I don't know what the exact number is now, but people like myself, I have an almost 3-year-old daughter, and I can't wait for her to be old enough to start to have these role models. And, you know, women's soccer, you have it, and gymnastics, and swimming and diving, and, you know, all these other sports that have already kind of made their way as role models, and now you have the WNBA, which I'm not going to put it alongside MLB or NFL or the actual, you know, NBA, but quietly it might become as popular as the NHL.
Yeah. Now, I mean, again, everything's great right now. Everything's rosy. Everything's wonderful. Yep. Grow, grow, grow. Line goes up. It's fantastic. What are some challenges that you that we might see? I mean, with everything's great, everything's growing, but, you know, sometimes line doesn't always go up. Sometimes people want a piece of the pie. I mean, what are some issues that you may come up in let's say, 5-10 years?
Well, the big challenge right now is that they don't pay their players enough money so that they will prioritize this first. And, you know, we saw this with the Eurobasket tournament that just happened. I don't want to bore people with, you know, the machinations of international women's basketball, but a lot of players, including the Valkyries' first draft pick, they drafted a gal who chose not to come here because she can make more money by playing overseas. And so until that changes, and I know that the new collective bargaining agreement's coming up, and so until this league becomes the preeminent, you have to be here at all times league, you're going to have a little bit of that distraction factor. But aside from that, I don't really see much of a downside, because more and more as we in this year of 2025, we become not only more tolerant of, but more interested in women's sports. And honestly, this is one of the best women's sports you could actually watch.
Do you anticipate any other sports seeing growth when it comes to, you know, women's versions of, you know, the NHL, of, you know, baseball or softball or football? Or just a very uniquely basketball situation?
It's unique to basketball, but it's also unique to where they choose to have their season, because here we are coming up on July 4th, or might be after July 4th, depending on when this airs, but it's July. I mean, we can safely say we're in the middle of summer. And what else do you have? You've got tennis players wearing white in England, and you've got baseball players who are in the dog days, and that's it. So I do think that the positioning of it calendar-wise, as a sports junkie, and that's me, if you put this in the fall, I'm sorry, I'm not watching it. You put it in the spring, it's probably not going to work. But summer, where there's nothing doing, I think that is a big part of why it becomes, you know, something that you can actually sink your teeth into.
Now, have you had a chance to go to some of the Valkyries games yet this season?
Yeah, I went to a game, and it is bananas. Like, the level of excitement is, you know, kind of like a Warrior playoff game where, yes, it's new and it's fresh, but I do think that you have a passionate fan base knowing that they're here for the first time, and many of them are going to their first game. And I know that we're, you know, midway through the year now, so some fans are going repeatedly for second and third and fourth times. But the freshness combined with the fact that they're winning. They're winning more than they were expected to win based on the Vegas odds, so they're better than people thought, and just the atmosphere is super fun.
That's 95.7 The Game's Dan Dibley. With this KCBS In-Depth, I'm Dennis Foley.
You've been listening to KCBS In-Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks, the three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.